Stop thinking about music and politics. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that I pooped in my own dog dish. And sometimes I would rather face not eating.
This is the Quality News Network. A Senate panel today authorized subpoenas for top White House political aides, including political advisor Karl Rove, in connection with the firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. The House authorized subpoenas as well yesterday. Once again, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez told reporters that he is not going to resign over the matter. The Justice Department insists the attorneys were fired for poor performance. Opponents say they were removed for political reasons. Former Vice Presidential candidate John Edwards and his wife Elizabeth held a press conference in North Carolina today to announce that her cancer has returned. She had been diagnosed with and treated for breast cancer in 2004. He said he will continue his 2008 bid for the Democratic presidential nomination, saying the campaign goes on. Mrs. Edwards has cancer in her rib. The doctors have said her cancer is treatable but not curable. She said she was, quote, incredibly optimistic about the future. In Baghdad, U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was holding a televised news conference today when a rocket landed near the prime minister's office. He ducked behind the podium and was shaken but unharmed. There were no injuries reported in the attack, which occurred in the heavily fortified Green Zone. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki had just spoken. He told reporters that Iraq was on the road to stability. President Bush is challenging Congress to pass the Iraq War Emergency Spending Bill without adding conditions about the pullout of U.S. troops. The House debate on the $124 billion spending bill started today, with a vote expected tomorrow. The Senate Appropriations Committee voted today to approve the $122 billion bill, which also places a March 2008 goal of removing U.S. troops from Iraq. President Bush has threatened to veto any legislation with language about a troop withdrawal. In London, three men have been arrested in connection with the terrorist attacks on July 7, 2005, that killed 52 people. In southern Afghanistan, fighting between Afghan forces and Taliban militants has killed 28 militants. U.S. and NATO forces were not involved in the recent battles. The creator of an anti-Hillary Clinton online political ad based on the popular 1984 Apple television commercial has identified himself. He is a Democratic operative who is employed by a digital consulting firm hired by Barack Obama. He has resigned. The company says he was fired. This is the Quality News Network.
Attention business owners. Getting new customers is now just one click away. Sounds too good to be true, right? Well, you got us. It's actually two clicks away with the new MyLocalYP.com. MyLocalYP.com is more than an online Yellow Pages. It's an interactive gateway that connects customers with your business, all in just two clicks. Why continue to pay thousands of dollars on an antique advertising medium, especially one that ends up going into the recycling bin? Make the smart upgrade at only a fraction of the cost. Try for yourself. MyLocalYP.com. MyLocalYP.com will put your business in the radar of thousands of potential customers. They'll be able to make reservations online, even print out the map with directions, all in just two clicks. Call 1-800-505-1883 today to find out more about this great new service. The sooner you do, the faster your cash register will start to ring. The number again is 1-800-505-1883. MyLocalYP.com.
A nonpartisan nonprofit group released a report today that indicates if there is a severe outbreak of pandemic flu, it would likely result in a major economic recession in the United States. A federal judge today struck down a U.S. law, the Child Online Protection Act, passed in 1998, that makes it a crime for website operators to allow children to access harmful material. The law was challenged by the ACLU, and the decision is seen as a victory for the First Amendment. NBC Universal and News Corp are teaming up to distribute television shows, movies, and video clips online. They are working with several large Internet companies in the venture as a way to counter the popular video sharing website. website, YouTube. Borders Group will do a company overhaul that includes cutting half the number of its Walden bookstores. The bookseller will focus on its domestic superstores and may sell its international business. The Labor Department reports that for the third week in a row, the number of jobless claims fell. Last week, 316,000 people applied for unemployment benefits. Celebrity chef Wolfgang Puck will stop serving foie gras at his restaurants. Light Sweet crude is trading at $61.69 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was up 14 points, the NASDAQ down 4, and the S&P 500 down 1. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Six minutes after the hour, and we are ready for three solid hours of conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid, and you know, if you've ever called a talk radio program, and I have, what happens is you got an idea of what you want to talk about, and then you're sitting there listening on hold, and you get a whole about 6 million other ideas. Well, the same thing happens when you're actually doing a talk radio program, because you're sitting there with a list of stuff, and a little handy dandy guide to where you want to go, and then something happens in the news, and you go, oh! And in particular, Wolfgang Puck will no longer serve foie gras in his restaurants. We should have had the Tony Bourdain interview that we had last night tonight, because that would have driven him nuts. Because while Wolfgang Puck will no longer serve foie gras, he will happily serve food that will turn his patrons' livers themselves into foie gras. But that's their business. So there's that. And this other thing, you know, I keep... It would absolutely slay me to have the Fox News website up. I won't use a Fox News source as a story. I won't have anything to do with Fox. But I did, in case there's anything breaking news, any breaking news or anything out there during a program, I do keep CNN's website up on my computer. You know, just in case, I don't know, Anna Nicole Smith rises from the dead or something. And this is one of those little language moments that tells me that, well, you know, it's just another one of those little tiny pieces of the puzzle that tells you that journalism in the United States has gone to hell. Now, I want to work with this headline from the CNN homepage. And I'd be, you know, your thoughts as well. Maybe I'm just picking nits. Here's the headline as it reads. Three held over London suicide bombings. Three held over London suicide bombings. Now, am I just seriously whacked and out of it? Or does the idea of holding three people over a suicide bombing strike you as a little bit crazy? No. Agnes is going in a different direction. I've got this mental picture of three corpses somewhere in an English jail. The three suicide bombers from the three held over London suicide bombings. Huh? So that, but no, breaking news. You know, I noticed that Joe has had this breaking news. I've had this breaking news. I think Guy James has had some of this breaking news. There's a lot of breaking news out of this particular story. I have been informed that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has admitted today that he started the Great Chicago Fire and was, in fact, Mrs. O'Leary's cow. He also stated that the Hindenburg exploded because of a spark from his hookah. In addition, he confessed that his real name is Walter Mitty. And we have this transcript from his torture cell.
I killed Christ. Yes, I killed Christ.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed squealed. Murmured CIA special agent in charge for things that aren't torture, Fred. Now we're getting somewhere. But now all this comes to me out of a story that I had up on the screen last night, but didn't get to. An Associated Press story by one Catherine Schrader, headlined "Red Cross Says Detainees Reported Abuse." Terror detainees once held in the CIA secret prisons were kept and questioned under highly abusive conditions, the International Committee of the Red Cross says in a confidential report based on interviews with high-value terror suspects. This story dates back to this past Tuesday. I'm sorry, for once I'm behind the curve instead of ahead of it. The Red Cross says the techniques reported by the 14 prisoners included sleep deprivation and the use of forced standing and other so-called stress positions, and were particularly harsh when used together. The prisoners were transferred from CIA custody to a military prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, in September, or as Flush Flimball likes to refer to it, Club Gitmo. The report is the first independent accounting of the detainees' allegations against the CIA since its detention and interrogation program began in 2002. At issue is something that the CIA uses, that they like, you know how it is with acronyms and alphabet soup things. Instead of using the language and words, we use initials and alphabetical mishmash. The CIA calls what they do EIT, Enhanced Interrogation Techniques. They include open-handed slapping, induced hypothermia. You know, that's where you throw ice-cold water on somebody and put them in a 50-degree room and say that you're not doing them any harm because it's not freezing. Sleep deprivation and, most notably, waterboarding. Enhanced interrogation techniques. That's what was... And back a while back, dear leader, dim son, George W. Bush, that great embarrassment to the Republic, said, quote, of the techniques, they were tough, they were safe and lawful and necessary. So it got me thinking. I mean, you know how it goes with my brain. I got to thinking about the current controversy regarding subpoenas and not subpoenas, and we'll talk to you behind closed doors, but we won't talk to you under oath. And I got to thinking about that great author of human dignity, human rights preservation, Alberto Gonzalez, who once wrote that it wasn't torture if it didn't cause organ failure or death. And everything sort of gelled and coalesced for me. And I realized what the answer is to what is now being described in the mainstream media as a constitutional crisis, a showdown between the White House and the Congress. Query. When we're asking questions of our tortured detainees, do we put them under oath? Of course we don't. But thanks to those enhanced interrogation techniques, do we get the truth from them? Well, look at everything Khalid Sheikh Mohammed confessed to. The Bush administration says that we get the God's honest and unfly-blown truth from them on a daily basis. Mrs. O'Leary's cow. So, it occurs to me, and, you know, maybe this is just crazy, but since the Bush administration doesn't want to take an oath and doesn't want to be on the record and doesn't want there to be any historical reference to what they have to say, call me crazy, but it sounds to me like they want us to treat them like someone at Guantanamo. Because all of those things apply to our political prisoners, our concentration camp prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. So since they don't want to take the oath, I suggest that we waterboard Karl Rove and Alberto Gonzalez in front of a joint committee of, because we don't want to have to do it twice, the water bill would go up. A joint session of a conference committee, if you will, of you know, folks from the House of Representatives and the Senate. You know, the enhanced interrogation techniques included open hand slapping. Now, I'll guarantee you that if you were able to survey them and let them speak candidly, there are most Democrats and probably some Republicans who would say, yes, I would like to walk up to Karl Rove with my open hand and just slap the snot out of him. For that matter, George Bush himself, given the opportunity, and for all we know, he may even do it, and Karl may like it, go up and just open-handed slap the snot out of Karl. I'll bet you it'd work. Of course, you know, there'd be a downside to this. There would be ramifications to this, because if say, Barbara Boxer got to walk up with her open hand and just slap the spit out of Karl Rove's mouth, and he suddenly started telling the truth, we would then have to concede that the Bush administration's torture policy was valid. But sometimes I submit to you that we have to compromise in the American political game. So since they say that torture is so effective, I submit that we start torturing Bush administration officials. And we do it for the same good reasons, to protect democracy. If, after all, after Barbara Boxer has hosed down Karl Rove and put him in a 50-degree room for 48 hours and not allowed him to sit down, if he still won't talk, well, we know that he just must be washed in the blood of Jesus. And being a truthful kind of fella. On the other hand, if he sings like a bird, we take that evidence and we go and indict George Bush. For they that live by the sword shall, yea, verily, lo and behold, maresy dotes and dozy dotes, and little lambsy divey, die by the sword. What do you think? After all, none of this, not even Barbara Boxer walking over to Alberto Gonzalez and just slapping him in the face till his teeth rattled, would be torture, because Alberto Gonzalez, the guy getting slapped, has already said that it isn't. And if it is good enough for a goat herder from the wilds of the Hindu Kush, it is, by God, good enough for Alberto Gonzalez, and it is, by God, good enough for Turd Blossom. I think I'm onto something. I absolutely think... Now, I don't know. Would it be okay to let Hillary slap Karl Rove? Could Barack Obama go slap Karl Rove, or would the Federal Election Commission laws have to, and then everybody'd get to go slap Karl Rove? That part, I admit, would be a little bit dicey. But I think we've got the beginnings of something here, especially in light of this Associated Press story by Catherine Schrader. Red Cross says detainees reported abuse. Quote, they began, talking of the CIA, they began using some enhanced interrogation techniques with success. Buttressed by at least one classified legal opinion from the Justice Department, the CIA believed it was operating lawfully in detaining and interrogating roughly 100 suspected terrorists at locations from Southeast Asia to Europe. And, of course, the CIA still maintains that everything that they did was not only legal, but downright humane. So I ask you, if it's so humane, why can't the Senate and the House of Representatives do it too? We'll take a break. When we come back, your phone calls to 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Herbst. I play Elizabeth Weber on General Hospital. I want you to know about a wonderful nonprofit foundation called the Jesse Cause, saving the babies from Group B strep, also known as beta strep. It's named after little Jesse, who needed 3 brain surgeries, all because his mom was never given a simple test. Group beta strep is the leading infectious killer of newborns in the United States, yet most people have never even heard of it. Amazingly, 1/3 of all pregnant women have beta strep, and it's almost 90% preventable with common antibiotics. Tell your friends about beta strep, and if you're pregnant, ask your doctor to test you. Together, we can save the babies and put an end to this devastating yet preventable bacteria. For more information, call toll-free at 877-HALT-GBS. That's 877-HALT-GBS. Or log on to groupbstrep.com. That's groupbstrep.com. Jesse and I, thank you.
Twenty-five minutes past the hour. I'm Bob. Welcome to Head On for a Thursday evening, or God knows what it is where you are. And on the planet Zorp, I have no idea. But we're going straight back to the phones. One little observation for you before we go, though. Tony Snow said today on ABC that the executive branch is under no compulsion to testify to Congress because Congress, in fact, doesn't have oversight ability. What the pluck! I mean, Jesus Dill Harris, somebody help me. If Congress doesn't have oversight of the executive branch, then... what was all that crap in the Clinton administration about, you know, with Henry Hyde hollering about, oh, the flag is falling. And looking into, oh, God, what all the Christmas card mailing list they went into. Tony Snow, the earth's going to just open up one day and just God's going to pop you like a zit. Let's go to the phones. David's calling from somewhere near Nashville. David, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
I'm doing well. And yes, it's evening where I am, and it's evening where you are, and it's good to hear you transmitting from home base.
It's good to be here.
I'm sure it is. And as for Tony Snow... wait a second, there's a certain whirring noise that I can hear all the way down here in the middle of Tennessee. Aren't there some guys that died in the early 1800s spinning in their grave that Congress has no oversight over the executive?
You know, they
aren't there multiple bodies doing the big whiz?
You know, I think it may cause a minor adjustment of the Earth on its axis, and spring may come a little early.
Exactly. Never mind global warming. Global spinning is going to change. And oh my gosh, you know what? That interrogation question that you've opened up with the EIT. You know, I don't think you get any good information out of that, but I'm all in favor of applying the EIT to several of them. I just wouldn't ask the bastards any questions. I'd give them a real hard day twice around the track and say, we'll begin tomorrow morning at 6:30. Have a nice night.
Don't you want to know anything? No, we'll just do it again.
No, I don't. Now, I do know of one case where that sort of stuff would not work. Were we to include Flimball in the mix, you know, he would be absolutely unfazed, undaunted, and unrepentant. Because you know what? He takes a fresh box of cigars. He gets on a plane. He goes to the Caribbean. He swallows a couple of those pecker uppers that he's so famous for. And then he's right into the stress positions anyway.
You didn't call those pills what you just called those pills, did you? Yes, you did.
Oh, well, hey, there's no dirty words there. Come on, then.
No. Oh, that's beautiful.
But I called for another reason.
Okay.
And you were going to say, though.
No, please, go ahead.
I am aware of Mr. Edwards, the presidential candidate, and his wife making public the fact that her cancer, Mrs. Edwards' cancer, has reoccurred. And this is a very special moment for me, a couple that I was very close to, the woman of the couple. I mean, of all the people in the world, you would have never thought this woman would have ever had a disease. She was an athlete. She was slender, no bad habits. And breast cancer took her after 4 years of the most valiant struggle ever put up. And when you're in that interim period after the first encounter and you feel like you're doing okay, and my friend had the same experience as Mrs. Edwards, she was fined for 14 months. Then there was a little of what they didn't want to hear, and then a lot of what they didn't want to hear. And now that poor woman is faced with a reoccurrence. It's attacking other areas of her body, and the poor woman is going to be faced with pure torment, because here she is. It has already been described by their medical people as not curable, but treatable. That right. means two or three doctors and four or five major corporations are going to profit from that poor woman for years while she's made miserable. You know, it used to be that we worried about funeral homes taking advantage of it. Well, they can only do that once. I have grave reservations about the oncology profession in this country, but anyway, the point of this is to draw that picture, and I'm serious, as ugly as Carl Rove, as ugly as all of those people are, even the mini Carl that worked for Don Lawless, it's only going to be a matter of time until the right-wing hate views start. Oh, the Democrat Party's just doing this for a sympathy vote. Oh, Edwards is so mean, he's forcing his wife to campaign.
It's already happened.
Oh, I didn't know it for sure. It just, I flashed on it this afternoon.
Oh, yeah, it's already happened. Somebody sent me a link to a piece from Time Magazine of a guy saying that, okay, well, you know, that plays brilliant, that plays valiantly. You know, they're going to continue. The show must go on. But at the end of the day, the American people are going to think less of John Edwards for not dropping out and loving his wife.
And had he dropped out, they would have said, see, he can't do more than one thing at once. He's just afraid of competing with the Republican Party.
What kind of president would he have made if he can't handle the pressure of a little family disease?
Yeah, what's the death of your wife? I mean, what is that about? Good grief. Get out there, shake those hands, kiss those. Oh, I am, well, I was afraid it would happen. I put it up there expecting the worst to the Republican Party, and by God, they offered it up for him.
You will never lose money. You will never lose money, David. Betting with the depravity of the Repigs.
No, not ever. Not ever. Oh, that is so disgusting. Well, I hate it that I was right. And believe me, I wish Mrs. Edwards, I wish those nice folks all the best. I was in the circle of friends surrounding this couple I referenced earlier, so I have a little bit of awareness. You know, it wasn't blood kin, but it was close to. And I really feel sorry for anybody in that situation. And all I've ever heard is that she's a wonderful woman in all respects, bright, caring, all the rest of it.
Yep.
They're together, no scandals, you know, pointed at Mr. Edwards.
Been married for 30 years, you know, just plumb swimming in family values.
Oh, the right one.
Yeah.
Lost the son to a freakish car accident. I mean, they've had enough pain. They've had enough pain. I mean, as if the pain given by the Republicans during a political campaign isn't enough. They've come up the tough way. I mean, Edward Dabb, what was he, a, you know...
Mill worker. Garbage man, wasn't he? Or?
I think he worked in the mills, and I think Edwards actually worked in the mills for a little while and then said, no, you know, wait a second. Hold it. This university stuff, I'm going to try that. And the next thing you know, he worked his way through law school and condemned by the Republicans for being intensely successful in his craft.
Well, I'm looking here at the chat room, David, and I'm reminded by our good friend ELO that maybe nobody told Mr. Edwards that going golfing while his wife is ill is the loftier aspiration. Yeah, because we will all recall that on the day that they buried their daughter, Barbara and George Bush Sr., had a golf outing scheduled that day that they just couldn't miss.
Well, you know, a good tee-off time in relation to a lunch reservation.
Exactly.
You don't want to miss those things.
Well, she's a gutsy woman, and I can't imagine the hell that they're going to go through. Because what you said is right. You know, well, we have a new experimental procedure we'd like to try.
And this is your chance, Mrs. Edwards, and if you try to pin it down, every time there's another treatment, unfortunately, in some cases, the chance goes from 40% to 30% to 20%. we're talking about ending your life, a lot of people will say, well, I don't care what the odds are. Where do I start?
Yeah.
And I've from one ring outside a family, I got to watch that. And it was very sobering and a very enlightening and the most human thing I've been exposed to.
Well, you know, I admire them for going on. I don't know what Edwards's chances are. You know, if you pay attention to the media, they've declared it's a two-horse race, which is, you know, is highly offensive to begin with. The people of the United States deserve an opportunity to make their choice and not have it made for them in the boardrooms of Fox and CNN and NBC and MSNBC. But they're going to soldier on, and frankly, that's what you do. If you like you do, or I presume you do, and like I do, if you believe that this is not dress rehearsal, that this is it, do it or don't do it, but don't leave anything on the playing field, then what other thing do they have to do than to stand out there in front of the cameras and microphones and saying, no, we're not going to quit. We're going to keep going. We'll keep going until there's no go left in us.
I'm guessing she was the point of the spear in encouraging him to go on. I just have that. Did I completely? Yes, I did. I completely beat up the bottom of the hour break. Do we need to do that?
I need to. I'm just going to hit the go ahead and take a few more calls. But very well said.
Well, there's one other aspect. You know, you and I sports. I heard a great story about this Mrs. Edwards today, and I'll keep it really, really short. During the 2004 campaign, Keith Olbermann was trying to make contact with Edwards, wanted an interview. The people said, oh, yes, he'd love to do it. He'd love to do it. Loves your background. And then in the next email transmission, Mrs. Edwards would like to speak with you, Mr. Olbermann. And Keith, in telling the story today, looked at the email and went, how could this be? What's this about? I don't really get it. And he responded, and the next thing you knew, he was on the phone with Mrs. Edwards. And she said, well, you know, our son was headed off to college, and one day we happened to sit down together as he was finishing high school, a few months before he finished high school, and we watched SportsCenter together. And we'd grown a little distant, the way high school seniors grow distant from their mom. And she said, you know, for 2 months almost straight, we watched you two guys do SportsCenter, and we reconnected before that big college break came. We really bonded, and Mr. Olbermann, I would just like to thank you for the very positive and informed way you do sports. It let my son and I really know each other again at a time when that's difficult to do. Now, that is a very insightful woman speaking about something where she had a chance to do something with a son about to enter into a 4, 5, or 6 year period when he was going to be way away doing things that, you know, had nothing to do with mom. But she wanted to make sure the guy that did the show that he liked, she wanted to make sure he knew of it. And I swear, I think on live radio today, I could hear Olbermann breaking up.
Wouldn't be surprising. He's a class act.
A class act.
And frankly, you know, I admire someone who does what she did in that instance. You know, I had somebody that I admire on the show last night. And, yeah, I may have been a little gushy. But the opportunity to thank somebody for making your life more enjoyable, making your life more pleasant, is something that we all owe to each other.
And if
you've got the class and the panache to be able to do that and the opportunity to do that once in a while, your life will be better for having done it because you will have improved someone else's life. It doesn't change the paycheck.
No,
it doesn't change the benefits package, but it makes it a damn sight more easy to get up the next morning.
And in the course of that brutal campaign, there was absolutely zero payoff for her to take that 10 minutes to do that. And 10 minutes in a campaign like that, they script every single second. So, yes, she took time to do that, and that speaks volumes about what kind of person she is. Well, I'll get out of the way. It's great to hear you from home. I've been busy lately. It's great for me to be home. Looking forward to a nice spring. So hope it's all going well, and thanks for the chance to be on the radio.
Oh, my pleasure. Always a pleasure. Anytime. You take care,
have
David.
Later. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And we'll roll on to our good friend Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Doing well. Yourself?
Reasonably well.
Good.
Pursuant to the remarks made concerning Mrs. Edwards, she has contributed a great deal over the past 2 years, and truly their trip has been one through Sinai. And I will think that regardless of what happens, number one, it will demonstrate the real values of the people that they are and what they represent, and their what is called true courage in the face of extreme adversity. And I would be very careful if I were the Republicans before I would try to use this against them or to try to pursue that, because, I mean, you know, when Evita Perón died of leukemia or whatever killed her back in the 50s, that was used to great advantage to help her husband. I mean, from the practical standpoint, it's just real politics. So they better watch out before they start trying to do something like that.
Well, it might be they just can't go there. They dare not go there, Jim.
Well, they'll go anywhere they think they could go anywhere to do anything.
You know, not when Newt Gingrich's on wife 3 or 4, and Giuliani's on 2 or 3, and
but see, these
McCain's on wife number 2.
But see, don't you understand? A lot of these folks, not all, but a lot of them, they have no sense of proportion. They have no sense of restraint. And what is going to topple this administration is going to be one word, hubris. And that's what I'm banking on, hubris. I mean, I have never seen people to express a complete and utter disrespect and disregard for the law, for procedure, for substance, de facto and de jure. I have never seen anything like it.
Well, we've got the audio of Tony Snow's comments from earlier today.
I heard him. Good God.
And I don't, you know, I understand journalistic ethics really, really well, Jim, having tried to practice them for a little while myself.
Mm-hmm.
But there comes a point at which, you know, if Tony Snow says that to you and you've got the coffee mug up at your mouth, you do the spray take with the coffee. I saw a little bit of that in a clip. Tom DeLay is out hustling his book right now.
Oh, I've seen that, yeah. I mean,
and he got caught dead by none other than, and you know, this isn't exactly a guy that you'd count on for hardcore journalism, by Chris Matthews.
Yeah.
Who said drunk with, you know, it was blind with power versus drunk with power. And Tom said, no, I said blind. I got the book here. And hands the book to Tom DeLay. And Tom DeLay, well, I don't have my glasses.
Well, Tom DeLay is just an example of the very worst of our society and the very worst things that can be produced by the type of governmental mechanism which propelled him into that particular seat, which he held much too long.
But it's something that crosses individual personality lines, Jim, within the Republican Party. Whether it's Giuliani with his multiple wives / mistresses, or Newt Gingrich serving divorce papers on one wife while she was in bed recovering from cancer.
Double mastectomy.
Yeah, he asked his mother-in-law to tell the next wife that he was divorcing her. You know.
Well, I mean, he's just a man of real character, isn't he? Real character. But the thing about Giuliani, I'll at least give him credit for. I mean, he put John Gotti away, and at least he did have a 5 shining hour during 9/11. That's the only thing I could say for him. I could say more for Giuliani.
But it's worth remembering that Giuliani was walking the streets looking heroic in New York in the main because he had put the emergency response center in the World Trade Center and couldn't go there.
Well, the Port Authority did that, Bob.
It was his call.
Well, I thought the Port Authority did that. They have some type of advisory group. They advised him to do that.
He was advised against it.
And he put it there anyway?
And he put it there anyway. And at the same time that he was, you know, looking, you know, being America's mayor, the fire department couldn't talk to the Port Authority on their radios. The Port Authority couldn't talk to the PD. The PD couldn't talk to either one.
All staff was here, right?
And the reason for that was claimed by the Giuliani administration in New York was because the technology didn't exist to be able to make them be able to talk on all those bands. When in fact there are emergency responders all over the country who have those very radios.
Exactly. Well, I guess that was the only thing you could say is whoops. But, you know, pursuant to all this torture and all this other stuff that these people are talking about that you referenced earlier, well, I think it was Beria, who was the head of the NKVD or whatever it was called at that time. They had so many acronyms for it back in the 30s, the OGPU, the Cheka, whatever. He always said that if give the guy one night with me and I'll have the best, he's the king of England. But I would think that we have come much further than that when, you know, we can use all types of chemicals and drugs and things of that nature, that all these, I'll call them hard details, really aren't necessary, wouldn't you think?
Well, you would, but and that goes to prove something to me, Jim.
I mean, does somebody get a hard on by doing this to people?
I'm beginning to think you may be right, because a little, we've got stuff that goes far beyond sodium pentothal now.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And,
I don't want, if I were an interrogator, I wouldn't want to get my uniform messed up.
Well, but that's what tells me.
I know, but
that's what tells me that there's that there is an element of pure, unmitigated sadism involved in this, and that we enjoy it.
Well, you know, if I were put in a position where I had to get the truth out of someone, then I would do it in the least painful, most efficient way. And, you know, you'd be sure that the information is accurate because, I mean, if you put all these arcane devices in front of people, like thumb screws and hot irons or whatever, I mean, they're going to say anything. I mean, I'm sure this guy who confessed, what was this guy who, this Sheikh or whatever?
Yeah, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
Well, I'm sure he probably started the Haymarket riot. He got the Lindbergh baby. He probably set the Reichstag on fire. And he probably... Well, let's see, what else could he have done?
Hillside Strangler, Boston Strangler, Night Stalker,
yeah,
Green River Killer.
You got it. Ted Bundy was innocent, it was him. I mean, you know, I mean, when you use part details and stuff like that, and if people really get their cookies by actually physically abusing another human being and subjecting them to thermal hypothermia, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that the Gestapo did to people in those experiments, you know, those experiments, you know. I mean, is this where they get this stuff from? I guess so.
Well, some of it, I think, comes from the TV show 24. Because they had to bring in Kiefer Sutherland, who plays Jack Bauer on 24. They had to actually bring him to, I mean, this is like when an actor comes to a third grade class and explains that, you know, that he wasn't really killing the Indians on TV. The government, literally, Jim, I don't know if you saw this or not, recently had to bring Kiefer Sutherland to the United States Military Academy to explain to cadets that torture doesn't really work. Because in the limited amount of time that the average USMA cadet has for watching television, which is not much, more far and away the one thing they watch is 24.
Mm-hmm.
And they take that because these are still malleable 18, 19, 20, 21 year old minds, and they take that as a representation of reality.
I've never seen that program.
Nor have I.
I see no
point in it. But my TV time is very limited anyway. But the other thing I wanted to point out, Jim, and tell me if you think I'm wrong, by all means, we're dealing with people in these torture circumstances, and these are concentration camps. I mean, let's call them what they are.
They are.
These are people from another faith, from another culture, and for whom a table covered in the saps and thumb screws and the Iron Maiden in the corner is meaningless, or not meaningless, but it is well, you remember the old hymn from the old church, Blessed Assurance.
No.
Blessed Assurance, Jesus is mine, blah 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 blah. Well, this is that for them. The table full of those torture instruments, Jim, is nothing but a guarantee that they are on their way
to paradise.
And that no matter what happens, no matter what they confess, no matter what they do, they're about to get the 72 Virginians.
Well, as I said before, there are much more sophisticated ways of dealing with people, and I don't understand why they use methods like this. I don't understand them. If I had to, like I said before, interrogate someone, I certainly would not do it in that fashion. But I guess it's just an indication of the mindset of the people who do stuff like this.
Let's play just for a minute. Let's play a little hypothetical here, Jim.
Okay.
You mentioned, using chemical means and things like that. If your goal, and what I'm trying to isolate here, is whether we're dealing with sadism or a legitimate desire to gain information. If your goal is to get information to fight the war on Terra.
Right.
And you bring the guy in, and you got the water hoses there, and you got the waterboarding tub, and all of that stuff. And you ask him a couple of questions, and you say, "Boy, well, we're going to have to do this to you." And you work with me, and you never actually do it to him. The next thing he knows, he just passes out, chloroform, whatever.
Yeah.
And you get you wring him out like a sponge, and get every last little bit of information out of him chemically. And then you let him come to with his hair all wet, and you say, "By God, you're a tough nut to crack." And you just sort of let him know that he didn't tell you anything, and you turn him loose. And you follow him home with the information that you've gleaned. You're going to get something done then, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I think you might.
As opposed to, say, making him a wrecked man. I mean, if you think about Jose Padilla.
Right.
Who his lawyers say is now such a raving paranoid freak from the torture he's been subjected to that he can't even participate in his own defense and thinks that his own defense lawyers are government spies because of things that the FBI said to him. Now, if you've done that to a guy from Afghanistan and you send him home, that guy becomes a bit of a cause celeb, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
So if you really wanted the information and you really wanted to forward national security interests, which way would you go?
Well, I think I would, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. And for me, the straight line would be to do it where I would be guaranteed of getting the most accurate information from him without intimidation. Because if you put all these horrible things in front of him, he's going to tell you exactly what you want to hear, which is not exactly the truth.
And you'd like for him not to know that he's sung the song.
Well, if you could do that, that's fine. That's fine. I mean, he'd probably be so out of it, by the time he came to, he would have, sung like a canary, and, there would be no bruises, no burn marks, no broken limbs or anything like that. And, I don't understand the need for all these Vincent Price, Torquemada type stuff. I just don't.
Unless they actually enjoy it.
Well, when I took a look at that attorney general we have today, I was just picturing him with a big sombrero, a mustache, and bandoliers, and he looked just like Pancho Villa. Who would, wouldn't he?
Yeah, but that's a little bit of a slur on Pancho Villa, don't you think?
Well, well, what can I say? There's an old song about La Cucaracha, La Cucaracha, ya no quiere caminar porque no quiere, porque le falta marihuana que fumar, which was supposedly from around his period of time. But nonetheless, I mean, I think it's a matter of time until Gonzalez may have to sit down. But of course, who knows? But like I say, what's going to bring this administration down? And, we're jumping around here. It's going to be their own hubris because they think they're above the law. And, I think Senator Leahy has been empowered with the subpoena, has he not?
Yes.
Okay, now, if he invokes a subpoena, then they're going to take it to the court. That's going to take how long? 2 years?
To get through the courts on a motion to quash, I don't think 2 years, no.
Well, I've heard 2 years, so, I mean, eventually...
I mean, this isn't a full-blown trial. This is just simply a question of the... I mean, if you consider the briefing schedules and the oral arguments, you do it on an emergency basis through the federal district. You get a ruling. You appeal that to the D.C. Circuit. David Santel's already got the fix in there. And then you're up at the Supreme Court. So, you know, 2 years, I don't see 2 years on that.
Well, which way do you think it came out if it went to the court?
Oh, I think the Bush administration wins.
Yeah, they would.
And I also think that's a bonus for the Democrats in the 08 presidential cycle.
Well, you've got to take good news wherever you can find it, right?
If that's good news.
Yeah. But I just cannot understand Tony Snow saying up there, well, there's no difference between an informal interrogation and going before the committee and raising your right hand. And he's trying to sell the American people on that. And I thought, when I heard him tell David Gregory and this other lady that the other day, I thought to myself, my God.
Well, at what point does a journalist have the right, if not the ethical duty, to look at the guy and just say, stop it? I mean, you cannot legitimately hold that opinion or that position. It's impossible. I mean, history is rife with congressional oversight of the executive branch. You can make the argument, as I did, Jim, that impeachment itself is the ultimate congressional oversight of the executive.
Well, barring that, that's just about the only way to take care of them. But I can guarantee you one thing. There will something's coming down the pipe that will, I think, blow this whole thing completely sky high. I really do. And I think that...
Is it a revelation of some sort, Jim?
No, I just have a feeling that, you know, that something is going to happen intuitively that will just explode the whole thing, and it will be like a bombshell you've never imagined. I don't know if it'll be because of these judges that were terminated, if they could find something out there, or if something should happen to Cheney, or if something should happen to, you know, it's just amazing how when one little rock is loose, it can create a landslide. And that's what I feel like. I hate to see it happen to our government. I hate to see us have to go through this. But, you know, it's like an operation. It's going to have to be done. And with people like this who think that they're beyond the law, and the people who think that they are, you know, it doesn't apply to them, and they can just use every little trick they possibly can. Historically, it's always caught up with them. You know, I guess it is not belief in historical inevitability that they will, in fact, truly be found out.
I hope you're right. I want you to be right.
Me too. And I thank you for your time.
Jim, have a great night. Thank you very kindly.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. What do you think? I think what Jim's describing is something on the order of political karma. But what goes around comes around. You know, it's already being sold, as previously noted, as a constitutional showdown or a constitutional crisis. Why is it that when the Constitution works, it has to be played as a crisis? I guess what I'm asking in the long run is, have we reached a point in our republic where everything, be it no matter how sober, no matter how somber, no matter how serious, everything gets subjected to the American Idol treatment? It has to be sensational. It's not a legal difference of opinion. It's not a question of law. It's a constitutional crisis. Team coverage round the clock. The constitutional crisis marches on with the really stunning synthesized garbage music on bum bum bum. More on the constitutional crisis. We go live now. tell you what we do. We go now to the Quality News Network news. If you want to get involved with the conversation, do so, please, at 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is your voice. This is America's liberal voice. This is the Head On Radio Network, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. A Senate panel today authorized subpoenas for top White House political aides, including political advisor Karl Rove, in connection with the firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. The House authorized subpoenas as well yesterday. Democratic Senator Charles Schumer noted that authorization is not the same as issuance. Once again, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez told reporters that he is not going to resign over the matter. The Justice Department insists the attorneys were fired for poor performance. Opponents say they were removed for political reasons. Former Senator John Edwards will continue to pursue the Democratic presidential nomination for 2008, despite the return of his wife's cancer. Edwards and his wife Elizabeth held a press conference in North Carolina today to make that announcement. Mrs. Edwards was treated for breast cancer in 2004. Her doctors say the cancer showed up in her rib, and though it's not curable, it is treatable. And a Senate committee voted today to approve a $122 billion bill to help fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Meanwhile, President Bush is challenging Congress to pass the Iraq War Emergency Spending Bill without adding conditions about the pullout of U.S. troops. The House debate on that bill is today, and a vote could come tomorrow. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg is urging Congress to reopen the federal fund for victims of the 9/11 attacks. The mayor says many people who worked to clean up the World Trade site have fallen ill because of exposure to several deadly chemicals and toxins within the rubble. And in Baghdad today, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was holding a televised news conference when a rocket landed near the prime minister's office. He ducked behind the podium and appeared shaken but was unharmed. No injuries were reported as a result of that attack, but it did occur in a heavily fortified green zone. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki had just spoken when the attack occurred in Baghdad. He told reporters that Iraq was on the road to stability. And 3 men have been arrested in London in connection with the July 7, 2005 terrorist attacks that killed 52 people in that city. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, coming up next.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of The Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At The Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to a million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Today is World Water Day, and the theme of this year's UN event is water scarcity. That's a problem that's caused by overpopulation and pollution. Scientists at the UN say that by the year 2025, two-thirds of the planet's population will be living with, quote, water stress.
North Africa, the Middle East, and West Asia will likely be the worst affected regions. Two new imaging techniques should help doctors diagnose lung disease earlier. University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine researchers say one of the techniques uses an MRI to watch helium gas flow through the lungs as a person breathes. Doctors should be able to use the results of the research as early as this summer. And a federal judge today struck down a U.S. law, the Child Online Protection Act, passed in 1998. That makes it a crime for website operators to allow children to access harmful material. The law was challenged by the ACLU, however, and the decision is seen as a victory for the First Amendment. Ford Motors is recalling 37,000 2008 F-Series Super Duty trucks. There have been reports of tailpipe fires on those vehicles. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.69 a barrel. The Dow closed up 14 points. The Nasdaq down 4. And there's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Crisson.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
That's right. And if you were listening to the news, you know that an internet porn law was struck down today, a 1998 law that requires verification. And the judge rightly ruled that folks can put filters on their internets. And, you know, it's a series of tubes, after all. You just got to put, you know, get a little goose grease and a little cork for the tube, and, you know, and your children are safe. But, you know, it was in the QNN newscast, it was hailed as a victory for the First Amendment. I tell you, it is a victory for the Republican Party. Because otherwise, well, now Republicans can continue to freely go to spankmeimanaughtyconservative.com without fear of it being found. Now Jeff Gannon and Dirty Sanchez and Karl Rove and maybe George can all sit there in some kinky little chat room and, no, I'm a 14-year-old virgin, type back and forth to each other.
Oh, God, that's bad.
Let's go to the phones. Our good friend from the chat room and from Democratic Underground, our good friend Ralphs is calling in. Hey, Ralphs, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
How are you? Good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you, too. I basically, you know, you were talking about the Supreme Court and whether Bush is going to have to go to the Supreme Court, and I'm wondering if Roberts and Alito will have to recuse themselves.
You could make the argument, Ralphs, that that would be the right, moral, decent, upright, and judicially ethical thing to do, but the minute you made that determination, you would know the answer.
Yeah, I know.
Ain't gonna do it.
Right. And also at Fire Dog Lake today, Empty Wheel has a post called Tongue Sings Little Inaccuracies, where she basically points out where Victoria Thompson is lying, or lied to the Waxman Committee last Friday. So it's sort of interesting that people want to check it out.
Oh, she's just awful, and apparently did it more than once.
Yes.
I was just reading during the break that, among other things, she not only about the Valerie Plame issues, but she also was a little bit less than truthful in regard to Al Gore.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She said, doggone it. No, it's not Tenzing. I was all wrong. This was Georgia Republican Lynn Westmoreland, who argued that it was illegal to allow Al Gore on the floor of the House. But, you know, I'm sorry. My bad, Ralphs, but I'm sorry. I get my crooked Republicans confused from time to time.
Right. Well, inaccuracy number one is Thompson said that Korn identified Plame as covert, which David Korn completely shot down in an article. And number two, Wilson said he was sent by the VP's office, which was untrue. Number three, the INR memo said that his wife sent him, which it did not. And number four, Robert Grenier, CIA briefer, told Libby about Valerie Plame, and it was not Grenier, it was Craig Small. Or Craig Small was Libby's briefer. So, you know, it's like if people want to go over there and check it out.
Sure, firedoglake.com.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And, you know, this is just what they do. I know it's got to drive you as crazy as it does me.
Yeah.
Just go out there and lie, blatantly lie. I mean, the kind of stuff like when you're 5 years old and you're standing next to the broken cookie jar with a cookie in your hand and your mom says, did you break the cookie jar? And you look at, no.
Oop, sorry.
Yeah, no, I didn't do it. You know, and they expect us to believe it.
Yeah. And that's why we need to have Rove and Harriet Myers, et cetera, under oath.
Well, it's not worth doing if they're not.
Right.
And it seems, and I've wondered from time to time how smart these people are. Because they're pushing the situation into a corner such that the only way you can get them under oath is to indict them.
Yep.
And, you know, once, you know, if they take the stand in their own defense, it's going to have to be under oath.
Yeah.
But I'm so sick of it. I was listening to Mike last night. You know, it goes back to when Dear Leader went to talk to the 9/11 Commission, and they wouldn't let anybody be there. And Dick Cheney had to sit next to him, and there couldn't be any notes, and he couldn't take the oath.
Yep.
I can't imagine a government that allows itself to operate, or expects anyone else to allow it to operate that way.
Yeah, and it's like, and during the Clinton administration, I guess, over 100 of his aides or whatever testified.
Right, and high-ranking aides, some 47, 31 different high-ranking aides, to 31 of them 47 times.
Yeah. Well, I had the figures wrong, I guess, but...
No, there were over 100 of them. If you count at all levels,
right,
and they just say it, and you know why? Because they're still counting on. They don't have to have 80%, you know, 70% approval. They don't have to have more than say what they've got now, about 29%, because they think the determination has been made that within that 29% lies the plus or minus margin of error difference in any given election.
And if these 29% vote 90% of the time and our 71% vote 50% of the time,
right,
then
they win.
Yeah.
Kind of depressing, really.
Yes, it is.
Ralph, so good to hear from you. I hope we will again.
Yeah, okay, cool.
All right, take care.
Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's cool. And our good friend Dave McKenzie calling from Wisconsin. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hello.
How you doing?
I have been doing a lot of thinking this afternoon, and I think I have it all boiled down to the basics here.
Good.
Now, let's say that we all are having a big problem with the toilet of the house, okay?
Okay.
First off, apologies for anybody who are listening while eating dinner. You know, I'm not insensitive to that. Now, the Republicans are saying that if we talk about it long enough, eventually we'll be able to get the toilet to flush up. The DLC is going around saying, hey, let's at least try to get this toilet to flush sideways. It'll be a step in the right direction. The Green Party realizes that we need an entirely new toilet, but they can't scrape up the money in order to either buy it or hire the plumber to install it. The Libertarians are having no part of this. All they want is their BMW and their the bottomless stash of Maui Waui.
And not having a functioning toilet is a function of personal freedom.
Yeah, entirely. And along comes Ralph Nader, who looks at the toilet, says, this brand is unsafe at any speed. That's the best he is able to do. And finally, after all is said and done, Chuck Harder will be more than happy to market to you a combination tinfoil hat and bedpan. Are there any angles I've missed?
No, you've got them all, Dave. That's every last one of them. I like the side flushing toilet the best. Because it's movement in movement in any direction is good.
No, I said a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
You're the one that used the word movement.
Okay, well, I meant to.
And now you're going to have to apologize to those people who are eating the spaghetti.
Darn right.
And anyway, at unreportednews.net, there is a new Echoes of a Century program that's going to be up at least last hour. When I last checked it, the old program for this past week with the Satchel Paige story drama.
Yeah, so cool.
And Who's On First and all that other great stuff there. And Harry Carey singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. That's all still on, last time I checked, unless Sarge has arranged to change it. Starting this weekend is going to be Martin Luther King Jr.'s Beyond Vietnam speech in its entirety.
And, you know, many people, most people, Dave, when you get to Martin Luther King Day in January, it's always the I Have a Dream speech. I think the Beyond Vietnam speech is quite possibly the most important address that he ever, ever gave.
Definitely. Definitely. But, yeah, there is a certain spiritual... spiritually profound nature to I've Been to the Mountaintop.
Yeah.
But certainly as far as a statement of social policy, Beyond Vietnam is as important as anything that he ever said, quite frankly.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. That we went over that speech a couple of years ago, I think it was, almost line by line during a show, and I don't think there was a dry eye in the place when we were done. His argument still rings very true in that Riverside Church speech, Beyond Vietnam. What was that, April 4th, 1967? It was a year to the day before he was killed, wasn't it?
Exactly 1 year. As I understand it, 1 year to the hour...
Wow.
It was delivered late afternoon that particular day. And he was shot about, roughly 6 or 7 o'clock Eastern time?
I'm not, offhand I can't recall, but the coincidence was stunning.
Yeah.
But in that speech, when he talks about that the profound effect that an unjust war has on an entire generation exclusive of issues of race, there's not a word, well, in fact, I did it as an experiment, if I recall correctly. We took a word processor and took the text of the speech, Dave, and did a search and replace. We searched for Vietnam, and everywhere it said Vietnam and Vietnamese, we changed it to Iraq and Iraqi.
Mm-hmm.
It did not change the meaning of the speech one iota. And at this point, that speech reads not as as some sort of a Jeremiad against the Vietnam War, which it was, but if you consider it in its current light, it reads like prophecy.
Mm-hmm. It does. It most certainly does.
So that will that's going up at unreportednews.net.
Yeah, it will be at the very latest starting tomorrow evening, provided that Sarge is able to get all the all the stuff correctly edited and what have you and whatnot. Now the week after that is going to be a combination of the events in that first week of April of 1968. The complete "I've Been to the Mountaintop" speech from the night before he was shot. Then the improvised address that Robert Kennedy gave in Indianapolis that night, having to explain to the crowd who had not heard as yet that Martin Luther King was shot and killed in Memphis. And probably the most heartbreaking sound anybody will ever hear is the reaction of that crowd when Kennedy tells them this.
If I recall correctly, it's a sound like life being pulled, for air being pulled from a room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's certainly worth. We have to remember this stuff. It's our job to remember this stuff, isn't it?
It certainly is. Oh, and one additional thing that very few people have heard. I believe either, I'm going to have to check my notes again, but it's either the day after that or the second day after that, that Robert Kennedy was scheduled to be at some sort of deliver some sort of an address in, I want to say it was Cincinnati. I may be wrong on that, but I want to say it was Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And he set aside the text that he was originally going to deliver, and he gave one of the most thoughtful statements on social violence in America that anybody has ever given. And very few people have ever heard that.
And that will be there.
And that is included in that, yeah. And as well as that brilliant Tom Clay sound collage that sold a million copies in 1971, which was based on a medley of What the World Needs Now and Abraham, Mark, and John. And I have that included as well. Rather interesting. Tom Clay, to the day he passed away, claimed that he never got payment for that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, The thing sold over a million copies, and he made this this deal with Barry Gordy of Motown Records, because he had known Gordy when he was a disc jockey at CKLW in Detroit in the early '60s when Motown was first starting, and he thought he was he would go with his old pal and put the record out, and apparently to the day he died, he claimed that he never saw royalty dollar one from that record, and the thing was a Billboard top 10 hit.
Amazing.
Sold a million copies, and unfortunately that was the same time period that Motown was not a member of the RIAA, therefore not being able to officially be audited for certification of a gold record.
Mm.
Motown was one of the companies that simply pressed the gold records and handed them out, and gave a bunch to Stevie Wonder, gave a bunch to Smokey Robinson, gave a bunch to Diana Ross, and to a certain extent, whether they act, some of those trophies, I don't think that they actually were able to determine that at the time that the trophies were given that they had, in fact, sold a million copies.
But in this particular instance with the Clay recording.
And certainly anything that got up to number 8 on the Billboard Hot 100 sold a million copies.
Well, statistics alone would sort of prove that out, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Tom Clay died. I want to say he died about 12 years ago. I'm under the impression that was the time frame. And he never got any royalties off of that.
Well.
But it is still one of the pieces of material. There was a friend of mine. I got a copy of this to him. This is a guy who was doing a talk radio program in Appleton, Wisconsin in 1979, and somehow or other he had not heard this record. I think basically at the time that the record was a hit across America, he was a country fan, and very few country radio stations would play something like this. And I was able to get it to him, and I watched him play this thing on the air. And as he's playing it, he's hearing it for the first time. He could not, he was so overtaken by the emotion involved that he simply had to go, straight to the commercials. He couldn't even, he wasn't even able to speak coherently for a few minutes afterwards.
Sometimes people get moved that way, and it's the people who used to spin records and things like that back when there were records to spin were pretty thick-skinned individuals, and it took a lot to shake them up.
Yeah.
So that speaks to the power of it. Well, I'll be looking forward to going and hearing it. I loved the baseball piece.
So thanks. I do appreciate that. Especially being able to hear last week's show, not just a dramatization of the story of Jackie Robinson.
Right.
But did you notice who one of the actors was in that dramatization? Studs Terkel.
Oh, yeah. And you can't miss that voice either.
No, you can't. And especially as closely associated as Studs has been all these years with Chicago, and hearing him talk about being part of Brooklyn.
Right. Precisely. Hey, Dave, good talking to you, and I hope people will go by and check out this, for want of a better phrase, a King Memorial that is very well placed and timely done. It's everything you put up there is absolutely fascinating. We sure do appreciate your work.
And, I got the stuff, and I do what I can with it. Yeah. Unreportednews.net is the name of the site to go to, and simply point your browser at it and click on the page, and it should automatically...
Yeah, down the left hand side of the page, King David's Echoes.
Yeah, and it should automatically start playing if you have your media player configured with
right.
the browser correctly.
Good deal. Well, thanks so much, and have yourself a great evening. Good to talk to you.
I'll do my best to get out of it alive.
And the toilet analogy is just perfect. Take care, David.
Yeah, that explains to you what all I wind up thinking about for hours on end. I think I'm probably listening to Howard Stern too often. That probably explains it right there. I'll talk to you later.
All right, bye now.
All right, bye.
King David McKenzie over at unreportednews.net. King David's Echoes, and the baseball piece is still up there. If you're a baseball fan, this is worth a listen in a big way. Also over at unreportednews.net, something I want to bring to your attention. Found out a couple of days ago that you know, time flies by so quickly that it's hard to keep track of all the milestones. But we are smack dab in the middle of Guy James's first anniversary on the air, or on the internets, so to speak, live. And for 2 days only, namely today and tomorrow, this is an offer from our good friend Billy Shears. 2 days only, today and tomorrow, in addition to the show CD that Billy is producing that will contain some of the greatest moments of the Guy James Show. In addition to that CD, in exchange for your support of Guy James's program, Billy is offering a custom CD to anyone who contributes $10 or more per month. They can choose any songs up to 14, and he'll produce that CD custom as well. Billy remarked that, sort of similar to what I said a week or so ago, he won't ask people to do what he himself is not willing to do. And so in addition to all these labors that he has undertaken to help keep Guy James on the air, that he is also, beyond his own contributions, jumped into the 60 heroic souls doing $10 a month to help Guy meet expenses. So Billy has now become a bronze level contributor, so to speak. Also over there at unreportednews.net, as you go down the left side column, Billy Shears' site is there. And there's a Thursday night special. Billy blends music and commentary thereupon. There have been commentaries from, well, I've done one, Guy's done one, John Fox has done one, and others coming from folks that you'll recognize. And the Thursday night special is Nora Jones and Billy's comments thereon. Go by and have a read. It's nice to see the melding of what we do via commentary and thoughts on paper mixed with the music that sort of engenders or serves as background or motivation for our thoughts. I've Got to See You Again by Nora Jones is the Thursday night special. And a CD. 14 songs of your choosing. If today or tomorrow you become a supporting member of the Guy James Show. Okay? It's a deal to me. I don't think you're gonna find anything similar anywhere else. So let's take a break. Jump right in. Got a couple of open lines if you've got anything you want to say. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email comes to bob@headonradio.com. And beyond that, we're nowhere near done. Bunch of creepy stuff out there. Some of which we will actually get around to. Some stuff that makes you sort of wonder what really went into the U.S. attorney firings. Jack Abramoff? You remember Jack? Bush administration's hard at work trying to get his sentence reduced. Yeah, we'll talk about that. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Symphony that's loud. Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway. It's Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop, right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
One plus one is two. Eat ice cream too fast and you'll get a brain freeze. Always talk quietly in the library.
If you're going to be 2 hours late, pick up the phone and call!
Remember, you're always teaching. Teach carefully. React with rage and kids will learn it's okay to do the same. Keep your cool and kids will do likewise. For advice, visit actagainstviolence.org. Brought to you by MetLife Foundation, National Association for the Education of Young Children, and the Ad Council.
Lightning only takes an instant. An instant that could end your life or injure you for life. Don't let it end your playing days on the field. Remember, you are in danger from lightning if you can hear thunder. Learn more about lightning safety at www.lightningsafety.noaa.gov. Lightning kills. Play it safe. This message is brought to you by the Iowa High School Athletic Association and your local National Weather Service office.
Daddy plays dominoes better than your daddy plays dominoes. Here's a cracker. Turns into meat. Jeepers. 21 minutes before the hour. What is Agnes doing to me? Yeah, we're just trying to do like little upscale conversation radio thing, so there's nothing better than some bumper music that's minor chord and downbeat. Brother. I'm Bob, by the way. The giggling noise in the background is Agnes. Now, this is a super cardioid microphone, so let me turn it. Giggle some more, honey. Oh, now she's gone quiet. Oh, almost gotcha. Nah, there's got to be some laughter. There's got to be some giggling. Because otherwise, you read stories like the following. And it's nothing but wall-to-wall screaming headline. appeals court reverses conviction for GOP official in New Hampshire phone jamming case. You remember the New Hampshire phone jamming case, don't you? Sure you do. This is the one where the Republican National Committee engineered a phone jamming scheme to block a get-out-the-vote effort on Election Day by Democrats in New Hampshire to make sure that that sleaze bucket, John Sununu, could become could be elected senator instead of Democratic Governor Gene Shaheen. So they jammed the phone lines. Dirty politics of the worst possible kind. Filthy politics. Nixonian politics, if you will. Well, guess what? Yesterday, Wednesday, a federal appeals court reversed the conviction and sentence of the RNC official who was the central figure in that filthy piece of gutter politics. Yes, oh Lord, yes, I got better things to do than come get behind this microphone and lie to you. It's the truth. James Tobin was sentenced to 10 months in prison on charges of telephone harassment, but the first U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Baston said that the statute under which he was convicted, quote, is not a close fit, unquote, for what he did. And said, and in the opinion said, that the government had failed to prove that Tobin intended to harass. I will just sit here and twiddle our thumbs and crack our knuckles and so I'd let that sit in for a minute. Now, see, because of the filthy little scandal that is the U.S. attorney firings, and because this appeal, this conviction, had to be handled by the United States Department of Justice, the Bush Department of Justice, and because this filthy little scandal has cast doubt on the integrity of the entire Justice Department, you can't help but read a story like this and say, you know, I'll be damned. I wonder if they mailed it in on the appeal. Wonder if they just phoned in the appeal. This is a 10-month sentence for telephone harassment. The Republican National Committee defeated the electoral plebiscitic will of an entire state, the state of New Hampshire. And some old fool sitting, and I don't care if he's a Democrat or a Republican, okay? Let's get clear on that. Some old fool sitting on the first U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Boston decides that the conviction isn't a good fit. Damn, Your Honor, this is not a swimsuit competition. This is astonishing to me. This is just it makes me sick at my stomach. A Justice Department spokesman said prosecutors were reviewing the decision and did not say if they planned to appeal. No decision will be made, he said, until Alberto Gonzalez has delivered the spankings. New Hampshire Democratic Party Chairwoman Kathy Sullivan said, "Oh my God, wow, you know, sometimes there's like no justice." You think I'm kidding. That's the quote. Oh my God, wow, you know, sometimes there is no justice. Dan Ronayne is a spokesman for the Republican National Committee. Curiously, the Republican National Committee paid for James Tobin's defense. Yeah, I know, I know, I know. The Republican National Committee paid for his defense. Little dude gets busted with some rock in his pocket. There's nobody there to pay for his defense because, well, you know, we've got nothing better to do with our tax dollars besides raping a rock than to, you know, put 19-year-old African-American males in prison and destroy any hope of a normal life that they ever had. But the Republican National Committee is, by God, there to pay for the defense of James Tobin. And Dan Ronayne, a spokesman for the Republican National Committee, says, "We are pleased for Jim and his family." Is it fair of me to wonder if the appellate team mailed it in on a whispered comment from Samson or Delilah or the Alberto Gone Lawless? I think that's fair. It's the kind of thing that this scandal puts that it defeats any last vestige of confidence we had in the neutrality, the impartiality, and the ethicality. Ooh, take that word out behind the building and shoot it. Of the Department of Justice. Four criminal prosecutions coming out of the phone jamming scheme, a lawsuit. And nothing. Nothing. And they were guilty. Guilty as homemade sin. They introduced, dig it, at trial, they introduced records that show that Jim Tobin, we're happy for Jim Tobin and his family. Yeah, okay, yeah, because Jim Tobin's family was on trial too. Kiss my butt. The phone records introduced at the trial show that Tobin made 24 phone calls to the White House political office. Gee, who? Help me here. The political office. That would be the president's chief political advisor. That would be Karl Rove. Tobin made 24 phone calls to the White House political office within 3 days around Election Day 2002 when this filthy little bit of Machiavellian garbage was being done. That's when the phone jamming deal was finalized, that's when it was done, and that's when it was abruptly shut down when the heat came on. And nobody's gonna do a day. The entire state of New Hampshire got ripped off by the Republican National Committee, no less than if the RNC had gone home by home into each and every home in a ski mask, black shirt, and black trousers and stolen the family silver and the TV set out of every single dwelling. That's how much the Republican National Committee ripped off the people of New Hampshire, and some old fart, some old fool sitting on the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals says it's not a close fit. If it's not telephone harassment to deliberately call a telephone number so that that telephone becomes useless, what in the hell is it? And do we know? Of course we do not. Whether the U.S. Attorney's Office mailed it in because they are, in fact, political hacks. Carol Lamb out in San Diego got her future dragged through the mud by Karl Rove because she prosecuted a guy named Wilkes, who was the guy who bought off the Randy Duke Cunningham. Holy cats. And we know now that there were memos circulating about whether someone was a loyal Bushy. And I'm supposed to have any confidence whatsoever that the Justice Department and the U.S. Attorney's Office did its absolute best to preserve this conviction on appeal. You lose a conviction because the judge writes that he doesn't think the conviction is a good fit. Prosecutions get overturned because the judge committed error. Prosecutions get over the convictions get overturned because the jury was unfairly influenced. But the jury in this case heard the facts. They were instructed on the law. And they were told to take the facts, apply it to the law as they were instructed, and determine whether beyond a reasonable doubt, James Tobin was guilty of telephone harassment. And they did so. And they said, 12 jurors, tried and true, said, yes, Your Honor, he is as guilty can be. He is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. He stands convicted. He went before the federal district judge who tried him, and the federal district judge took the verdict handed down by that jury of 12 persons tried and true and finalized that conviction. But it goes up to the first U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, wherein the Bush administration has replaced and replaced and replaced and padded and padded and padded and sandbagged and sandbagged and sandbagged. So that the fix was in. And I'm supposed to have confidence that we live in a land where we're nation of laws and not of men. Wow. Just wow. And by the way, like I mentioned, guess what? Jack Abramoff is off serving time until, 2011 in a correctional facility near Cumberland, Maryland? Guess what? Federal prosecutors in the last couple of days have begun filing papers arguing for the court to reduce his sentence, saying that he's cooperating wholeheartedly and providing meaningful and ongoing information. You know, this isn't even the conviction, the federal stuff. This is the conviction down in Florida. I mean, it's a federal conviction, but this isn't the real stuff, you know, where he was gaming the Congress and bribing the Congress and pitting Indian gambling casinos one against the other. No, this is a deal, what was it called, Suncoast Cruise Lines? In Florida, where they committed a bunch of mail fraud and general fraud and fraud on the case and fraud in the transaction, and a dude got murdered. And the Bush Justice Department, with its hat in its humble hands and its tender heart beating visibly beneath its fine Egyptian pinpoint cotton shirts, is standing before the bar of the federal judiciary saying, please, please, cut poor Jack Abramoff's prison sentence. Please, he's suffered enough. We feel badly for Jack and for his family. Now, a few minutes ago, we jokingly in a conversation with our good buddy King David McKenzie, said, I don't want to put anybody off their dinner. This puts me off my dinner. Federal prosecutors were canned because they weren't willing to bring frivolous prosecutions against Democrats in crap cases that they couldn't have won in a million years. And for that, they were called disloyal Bushies. And at the same time, and with the approval of Alberto Gonzalez, Alberto Gonlawless, they're standing, bowing and scraping and kowtowing in front of a federal judge, begging for Jack Abramoff's sentence to be reduced. You come up with your own analogies. You don't need me sitting here ticking off case after case. Oh, maybe I do. The guy rotting away for 25 years in the Florida penal system, where the Florida Supreme Court said his pleas don't fall on deaf ears, they fall on the wrong ears. He needs to ask the governor for clemency. The guy who was doing less oxycodone in a week than Rush Limbaugh did in a day is doing 25 years. And it is a manifest injustice. But in the Bush Justice Department, at that morning meeting where the coffee and the donuts sit on the silver salvers on the polished, hard, solid wood tables, and they determine the day's business, the real tearjerker, the real gutbuster, the real heart render is poor, poor Jack Abramoff. Rotting away in that hellhole prison in Cumberland, Maryland. This is a nation turned upside down. This is a nation, gone absolutely batty. A nation that can't stand to have the truth told to it, that wants only to think that it's, you know, we're the good people. That doesn't want to take a look in the mirror and find out that Snow White has become a bit of a crone. No. By the way, did you know that American Idol planted a crying adolescent in the crowd? This is Jack Abramoff. This is a guy who literally, in conjunction with Tom DeLay and Jack Reed, Ralph Reed, sorry, tried to subvert via the K Street Project the entire working of our federal system of government. In the days of ancient Rome that I'm so fond of reading about and talking about, he would have been taken quietly into a cave and garroted and left to rot there for what he tried to do to the Republic. But not here. Not as long as there's a Bush in the White House. No, sir. No, ma'am. Well, we've got to go to the news. And we'll come back with the third hour, your thoughts, your conversation, your input at 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. You are listening to the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, America's liberal voice. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. The Senate Appropriations Committee has voted to approve the $122 billion spending bill to help fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Meanwhile, President Bush is challenging Congress to pass a similar emergency spending bill without adding conditions requiring a deadline for U.S. troops to come home. The House debate on that bill started today. A vote is expected tomorrow. In the latest move regarding those 8 fired U.S. attorneys, a Senate panel authorized subpoenas for top White House aides, including political advisor Karl Rove. The House also authorized subpoenas yesterday. Democratic Senator Charles Schumer noted that authorization is not the same as issuance. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez is once again telling reporters that he will not resign over those firings. The Justice Department insists the attorneys were let go for poor performance. Opponents say it was for political reasons. Former Senator John Edwards will continue to pursue the Democratic presidential nomination for 2008. That's despite the return of his wife's cancer. Edwards and his wife Elizabeth held a press conference in North Carolina today to make that announcement. Mrs. Edwards' doctors say the cancer in her rib is not curable, but it is treatable. In Baghdad today, UN Security General Ban Ki-moon was holding a televised news conference when a rocket landed near the Prime Minister's office. He ducked behind the podium and appeared shaken, but was unharmed. No injuries were reported as a result of the attack, which occurred in the heavily fortified Green Zone. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki had just spoken when the attack occurred in Baghdad. He told reporters that Iraq was on the road to stability. Scotland Yard reports it's holding 3 men in connection with the terrorist attacks in London that killed 52 people in July of 2005. 2 of the men were about to board a plane to Pakistan when officials arrested them. Nuclear disarmament talks with North Korea have fallen apart. The chief North Korean envoy has left the negotiations and returned home. The North Korean government has refused to sit down at the bargaining table until the U.S. unfreezes $25 million North Korean dollars. New York City's mayor is asking for the federal fund for victims of 9/11 to be reopened because a lot more people have gotten sick from dealing with
Hugh Hauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking.
What are you looking for in your business bank?
Somebody that can offer me services such as car loans, equipment loans, leases, a line of credit.
And do you think because they're local, they understand your needs better than a bigger bank would?
Yes, I think they're really aware of the community and are here to help the small business people.
So it's a local bank with big bank services?
Absolutely. They're here on a regular basis to make sure if there's any other services they can provide, they're here to talk about it.
Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
We searched out a bank that would have the flexibility and the understanding of our needs and a willingness to spend the time doing that.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
The FDA is tightening up regulations on scientists with financial interests in drugs the agency is considering for approval. New rules proposed this week would ban scientists from giving advice in the approval process if they have $50,000 or more in stock or consulting fees from those companies. And 2 new imaging techniques should help doctors diagnose lung disease earlier. University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine researchers say one of the techniques uses an MRI. They use it to watch helium gas flow through the lungs as a person breathes. Doctors should be able to use the results of the research as early as this summer. A federal judge has struck down a 1998 law that made it a crime for website operators to allow children to access harmful material. The ACLU challenged the law and sees the decision as a victory for the First Amendment. NBC Universal and News Corp are teaming up to distribute television shows, movies, and video clips online. They are working to compete against YouTube, the popular video sharing website.
Light sweet crude is trading at $61.69 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was up 14 points at 12,461. The NASDAQ was down 4, the S&P down a half a point, and there's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
It just goes on and on and on. It's enough to make you wish you had some of those... those big old rubber boots that people who dig clams and stuff have, because you wade into this stuff and it just gets nastier and viler. And what our buddy King David said is so true. If we can just make it flush up, it'll at least be going some direction. Next up. How about... From today's Washington Post. Headline, prosecutor says Bush appointees interfered with tobacco case. Drip, 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 drip. And somewhere along the way, we get to ask the question, do we not, how long do we tolerate this misery? This travesty of everything that is not sacred, I don't want to use that word, valued and cherished within our constitutional form of government. How long, for the love of God, do we put up with this? The leader of the Justice Department team that prosecuted a landmark lawsuit against tobacco companies said yesterday that Bush administration political appointees repeatedly ordered her to take steps that weakened the government's racketeering case. Among other things, she said that a supervisor in the Justice Department demanded, not suggested, demanded, you know, and when you use words like demand, and you know, either you do this or, you know, go sell hot dogs on the corner and, you know, never be able to make the student loan payments on your highfalutin law degree. A supervisor demanded that she and her trial team drop recommendations that tobacco executives be removed from their corporate positions as a possible penalty. Now, it was a roundabout, got mentioned, it was kind of cute and funny, the Chiquita Banana Corporation pled guilty a few days ago, week ago, whatever, to having hired protection from what was described in the mainstream media as Colombia's most notorious left-wing terrorist organization. Right? Now, what is Chiquita Banana's punishment going to be? The little lady on the logo with the Carmen Miranda fruit hat, are we sending her to Columbia, Maryland with Jack Abramoff? We don't have any meaningful penalties for corporate America when corporate America flouts, tap dances on, and otherwise scoffs at our laws. Really, we don't. The court hereby assesses you a fine of $25,000. And the corporate defendant is standing next to corporate counsel, and corporate defendant turns to corporate flunky and says, write him a check! And then the corporation turns around, and this is one of the fun parts, the corporation turns around and writes off the criminal penalty on its taxes, and thereby gets the corporate taxes that it would otherwise pay reduced. Hell, they'll pay fines like that all day. We don't have a corporate death penalty. For God's sakes, the National Collegiate Athletic Association has a death penalty, so to speak, for sports teams that engage in flagrant and repeated rule violations. Now, we've got a death penalty for 17-year-old LaVon, who happens to be in the car when a drive-by goes down and has a Saturday Night Special and two rocks of crack in his pocket. We, by God, have a death penalty for him. But we don't have a corporate death penalty for Humperdinck J. Schmedlinger when he and his company get caught deliberately poisoning millions of Americans. No, good Mr. Humperdinck. He gets a pass from the Bush Justice Department when the trial team suggests as a possible penalty the mandatory removal from position of a corporate executive who is found to be filthy and dirty and as hateful and loathsome a lawbreaker as anybody coming out of the projects. And more so. Dig it. The supervisor and two others instructed Sharon Y. Eubanks and for those of you who may have some sort of a background in the law, this will make cold chills run down your spine and the little hairs on the back of your neck stand straight up, because this is the kind of stuff where if you do it and if you get caught, you just take that little law license and you fold it into a paper airplane, you go to the highest part of the building and you go, and it's gone. Fly it away. It's worthless because they're going to take it. He and two others, this Justice Department Supervisor Alberto Gonzalez flunky, demanded that Sharon Y. Eubanks, lawyer, member of bar, officer of the court, that they tell key witnesses, that Ms. Eubanks tell key witnesses in the case to hold on to your hats, change their testimony. To change their testimony. They wrote her. Oh my God. I mean, this is like one of those horror stories out of Hollywood where they do the focus groups and the test marketing. I'm sorry, Mr. Director, it's a fine movie, but you know the heroine dies in the end, and we've test marketed it, and it doesn't work so well. They want the heroine to it happened. You remember the movie Pretty Woman? That movie ended reasonably. It ended as it should have ended. Julia Roberts goes back to being a whore, and Richard Gere drives away. And it ends rationally. And they came back and said, no, the Richard Gere and the hooker have to wind up together forever, amen. And they changed it. Well, I can well imagine, because you see, it's not that far different. When I plan and put together any given program over the course of 3 hours, I've got an idea of where I want to go with the program, what I want to say, the points I want to make. I don't script it all out, because if I just sat here and read to you, it would be nothing but crickets in the chat room and nothing but a sort of a sound down the stream. But you do make plans, and you do make notes, and you've got points. And in Sharon Y. Eubanks' case, she scripted the whole closing argument. And she kind of had to do so, because that was a really expensive federal trial, not a talk conversation radio program. And she had to hit certain points in order to merit a conviction. And so she writes it all out, page by page, word by word, point by point. And the Gonzalez flunky comes along after they've told her to tell the key witnesses to change their testimony. In other words, after they have told her to not suborn, but to actively procure perjury. Three political appointees came along and ordered Sharon Y. Eubanks to read verbatim. And again, I don't care whether it's in a court or behind a microphone or in a pulpit. If you just sit there and read, you're going to lose them. Whether it's a jury, an audience, or the faithful. You're going to lose them. So they come in and they look at Sharon Y. Eubanks, who apparently that morning must, by God, have woken up with a horse's head next to her in the bed. And they order her to read, word for word, the closing argument that they had rewritten for her. Now she says, and I quote, "The political people were pushing the buttons and ordering us to say what we said, and because of that we failed to zealously represent the interests of the American people." 20, and see, it would be really easy at this point in time to say, well, you know what you do. You know what the ethical thing to do is. You tell them that you'll do it, and in Sharon's case, you go to the ladies' room and you drop the transcript in the garbage and you do the closing that you had set up. That, or you pull a Willie Stark from all the king's men and you say, there's the Judas goat, there's the lick spittle, and you bust him right in front of the jury. And that's the heroic stuff that we love in America. We love the vision of Jimmy Stewart flagging on his feet, trying to get one more word out in that filibuster scene from Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and he's so tired, and the skin is literally hanging on his face, and he's exhausted, and his clothes look like hell, and you know that he's in a state of spiritual torment, but by God, he's Jimmy Stewart, and he's gonna rise above it. But that's not reality. That's not the reality of a mortgage. That's not the reality of kids in school and clothing to buy and food to put on the table. That's not the reality of car payments and much-needed vacation time. It's not the reality of a marriage already on the rocks because your spouse looks at you and says, I didn't mean to marry an absentee. We don't have a marriage anymore. That's not that reality. It's not the reality of 22 years of tenured federal honorable service inside the Department of, by God, Justice. Not the Department of Politics, the Department of Justice. The blind lady with the sword and the scales. That Chris Cope John Ashcroft, terrified of calico cats, thought was so obscene that he had to spend $8,000 taxpayer dollars to put a dress on to hide her dirty aluminum boobies. That is not the reality. The reality is a woman with 22 years experience with all of that hanging over her head who probably would like to say, why don't you take this verbatim closing argument and stuff it right up your old address? But she can't. And most of us forced with those dilemmas probably couldn't either. Don't kid yourself. Twenty-2 years she had as a lawyer at the Justice Department. Probably in somewhere along the way in the first year of law school, some highfalutin white-haired professor who'd never spent 10 minutes in a courtroom probably quoted Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. to her. A very high-blown phrase, a high-blown turn of words, where Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr., former Supreme Court Justice and cocaine addict extraordinaire, wrote, "It is possible to live greatly in the law." And 20 years later, having spent weeks with a prosecution team building a case piece by meticulous piece, some political piece of crap flack flunky appointee of the Bush administration comes in and says, "Sister, it ain't gonna be that way, sister. Don't you realize how much money the tobacco industry gives the Republican Party every year? What the hell is wrong with you, sister?" Here's your closing argument. We've written it for you. Read it. And she doesn't even get to do the thing with the sailors from the Mayaguez did and hold her middle finger up to the jury to let them know that she's got to read this crap. Here are the names of the pieces of crap. Associate Attorney General Robert D. McCallum, Assistant Attorney General Peter Keisler, and Keisler's deputy at the time, Dan Marin. Political appointees all, and they were the ones responsible for trying to bank the heat on the tobacco industry. The tobacco industry who was being tried for racketeering. You know, basically behaving like the mob. High-ranking Justice Department officials said there was no political meddling in the case, and the department's Office of Professional Responsibility concurred after an investigation. Well, those dumb bastards have the same 20-year career on the line, too. What do you want?
They had a perfectly fair trial, and then they were taken out and shot.
Jesus. Ms. Eubanks said she's coming forward now because she's concerned about what she called the overwhelming politicization of the department demonstrated by the controversy of the firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. And she said that Congress should not limit its investigation to the dismissal of those 8 U.S. attorneys. Quote, "Political interference is happening at Justice across the department. When decisions are made now in the Bush Attorney General's office, politics is the primary consideration. The rule of law goes out the window." Let's see. 22 years she was at Justice. She retired in December, so that means 22 minus 6. 22 minus 6. Okay, so that's the Bush administration she lawyered under. She lawyered for 10 years under... 6 years, and then 8 years. It's 14 out of 22 years. 4 years under Bush 1, that's 4 more years. That's 18 years. And the last 4 years of the Reagan administration. So that's 14 years of Republican presidents and 8 years of a Democrat, and she soldiered on. And she got to the point where she could retire, and she began to speak her mind. Now, on the one hand, you might look at it, you might subject her to that hard analysis. I have subjected the generals in our military to that hard analysis, asking them, you didn't agree with the Iraq war, why couldn't you speak up when your country needed you? And you were still standing there with all that scrambled eggs and stars and jewelry and bars and whatnot all over your little costume, when people were dying for your silence. I don't know. Do we cut these people a break? Do we understand them now? Do we understand the criminal depth to which this Bush administration will go to destroy any human being who gets in its way and or interferes with its massive plan for your subjugation, my subjugation, our subjugation, and the absolute rise to dominance of their corporate cronies and pals? Do we understand that now? Do we have a little more sympathy? The rule of law goes out the window. McCallum, who's now the U.S. ambassador to Australia, you remember this is one of the sleazebags who interfered in the case. Said the final decision to reduce the proposed penalty to pay for smoking cessation programs was vindicated by the judge's ruling that she could not order such a penalty. You damn sure can't order what you're not allowed to ask for, can you? Yeah, forgive me, I'm a smoker. I sit here every night, and sometimes I get so damn worked up I light one off the one that's going out. But that doesn't change the fact that I recognize that I, as an addict, am being manipulated no more, no less than if I was buying it from the kid on the corner by the schoolyard who said, hey, kid, the first one's free, because you know what? Back when I started, they damn near were. Well, you know, those warnings, you know, you're young. Nothing will happen to you. The insides of my lungs, I've seen x-rays, and they're not real pretty. My lungs look like they're leopard spotted. So far, they say, well, you know, you're lucky. Those are, what are they? Granulomas. Damn, sounds like a breakfast cereal. New from Post, granulomas! But I've got them. And I know why I've got them. And I know why I'm not quitting tomorrow, the next day, or the day after that. Because it has been arranged to make it more and more difficult for me to. And that kind of conduct is conduct you would expect from the mob. And Big Tobacco behaves like the mob, because in many instances, in many ways, they are the mob. They put the real mob to shame. But we're not done tonight. We've got another half hour to go. We've got a break to take. I need a cigarette. And we'll come back, and there's just a, you know, no, no, no. We're not done. We're not done at all. Because, well, there's Patrick Fitzgerald. Sleazy bastards. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is the Horn. You got anything you want to say? Better get it said. Don't be lining up 10 minutes before the show's over and expect me to play auctioneer talk host. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Mary's dress waves like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Roy Orbison singing for the lonely. Hey, that's me, and I want you only. Don't turn me home again. I just can't face myself alone again. Don't run back inside, darling.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Do you believe the environment is issue number one? Does the idea of genetically modified food cause you to lose your appetite? Do you prefer green over greed? Do rising sea levels and vanishing polar ice cause you concern about our planet and what we are doing to it? Would you like news with attitude on the environment, organics, renewable sources of energy? Well, then join me, John Fox, for Foxed Up. Weekdays, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. in the UK, and 9 a.m. here in Sydney, where conversation radio becomes conservation radio, and we turn it straight up to 11, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to wateruseitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
Smuggling guns and arms across the Spanish border. The wind whips up the waves aloud. The ghost moon sails among the clouds. Tells the rifles in silver on the border.
If I could play guitar like that. Lord. Peter White, long-time guitarist for Al Stewart, and does beautiful work on his own. Instrumental stuff mostly, and just gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous music. 26 minutes before the hour, and we're not done. We got about 20 minutes or so of conversation left. If you want to get involved, no, I said that you kind of wish, but you know they've done such a good. I'm babbling now. Oh, I made Agnes Shoup coffee out of her nose. All these ideas just burble to the top, and you want to get them all out. What I'm trying to get at is, we could use a John Dean about now. Somebody who is still inside the administration, who finally gets so sick of it and so tired of it, and comes out and spills their guts and says things like, "Oh, there's a cancer on the presidency." There's not a cancer on the presidency. The presidency is a cancer. No, and this Justice Department thing, the lying to go into war, that's cost 3,000 lives, American lives, that nearly approaching a million Iraqi lives. And it was political. And it was filthy, and it was dirty, and it was rotten. Katrina, the politicization of a response to a disaster neither looked for nor deserved. But you realize the full scope, the full total metastasis of the cancer when you realize what went on inside the Department of, by God, Justice. Career attorneys, I hate that word attorneys, career lawyers, who from one administration to the next try to stay focused on the rules of professional conduct as they apply to prosecutors, and to solely do that. And the roots of this tumor have gone so far deep into our government that you are not unreasonable if you wonder if we can ever extricate them from our government. You know all about the rankings, about the email that says that shows that, oh, these are loyal Bushies. Yes, sir, I'm a loyal Bushy. Well, apparently, Patrick Fitzgerald, in 2005, back when a lot of us were wondering about Fitzmas, he was wondering if, as a result of his appointment to investigate the Valerie Plame outing, he was going to wind up being an unemployed lawyer. Again, from the Washington Post, Dan Egan and John Solomon, it turns out that Patrick Fitzgerald, who was hailed when the Bush administration, when he was appointed to handle the leak investigation, one of the greatest young trial lawyers in America. And yet the Bush administration in March of 2005 ranked him among prosecutors who had not, quote, not distinguished themselves, unquote. That placed him below strong U.S. attorneys who exhibited loyalty to the Bush administration, but a notch above weak U.S. attorneys who chafed against administration initiatives, etc. You know, sort of smaller than a camel but bigger than a bread box. And as it turned out, two prosecutors who had the same ranking as Fitzgerald turned out, they got canned. We're among two of the eight. And Fitzgerald, well, one could argue that Fitzgerald only managed to keep his job because some wiseacre in either the Justice Department or the Bush administration, much like the guy in Catch-22 who looks at General Peckham or General Dreedle or what, no, sir, you can't shoot him. I can't? No, you can't shoot him. Why not? Well, you just can't, Dad, General. Somebody went to Alberto Gonzalez or Dear Leader or Karl Rove and said, the guy's investigating the Plame, the Plame leak. You can't can this one. We can't? You shouldn't. Why not? Well, it'll be worse than the Saturday Night Massacre. What was wrong with that? The reference to Fitzgerald is in a portion of the memo that the Justice Department has refused to turn over to Congress. Holy cow. dirtier and dirtier and dirtier and sleazier and sleazier. And these people are bunkered up, trenched up. If they have to get out of that trench, they've got another trench behind them, and there's another trench behind that. And like Tony Snow said, no one knows what's going to happen in the next 21 months. A lot of us will be spending the next 21 months praying to an unseeing, unhearing, uncaring God that we be delivered from this bondage of this Pharaoh. But we know that mostly, like some sort of bad acid trip, we just gotta ride it out and hope the morning comes and keep the snakes away from the bed. This is just amazing, just astonishing. It's like a slap in the face. Oh, and by the way, our buddy Jean Schmidt, Mean Jean, she writes a column and she hangs it up at her website. My Examination of Walter Reed Army Medical Center, What I Did on My Summer Vacation, by Mean Jean Schmidt. There is no question that Building 18 should have been upgraded or not in use at all. Postponing Building 18's demolition and allowing its use for living quarters was a poor management decision, and the decision makers should and have been punished. Needless to say, Building 18 is now empty and will be demolished. While I found the situation at Walter Reed... Wait, okay, this... No, sit down. Sit down. I'm telling you. Back away from anything you would be inclined to put a brick through. While I found the situation at Walter Reed to be overblown by both politicians and the media, I hope that future accounts will bring more light to the real issues. Did you know they have chicken and dumplings every Thursday? We need to do more to make sure that our veterans get the level of health care they desperately need. In light of recent events, several people have asked me about Cincinnati Veterans Medical Center, which I have had the opportunity to visit on several occasions. I have toured this facility's operating rooms and living spaces and visited with parents. Stupid.
Hair pulled back way too tight.
Agnes says her hair's pulled back too tight. Walter Reed is run by the DOD. The Cincinnati Veterans Hospital is run by the VA. Different critters. But no. I found this situation at Walter Reed to be overblown. Yes, there were rat feces. What's a little rat feces? I mean, after all, it's like my colleague Dr. Gingrey from Georgia said, if you leave food laying around all over the place, you're going to have some rat feces. The Washington Post two-part exposé detailed a story of neglect and dilapidated living conditions, including mold, rodents, and faulty plumbing. The president responded by naming a bipartisan commission on care for America's returning wounded warriors. I decided to visit the Walter Reed Army Medical Center so I could take a look at the facility firsthand, because she hadn't been there before, been voting all along for this stinking, filthy little war. She's never been there. And learn what is being done to address the situation. I toured all four outpatient housing facilities and was pleasantly surprised to find that three of the buildings didn't have rat feces. No, to find that three of the buildings contained clean living spaces, updated television and computer access, and full access to cooking units or cafeterias. Did I mention the chicken and dumplings on Thursday?
Oh my God.
I also toured Building 18. This building, which stood empty for years and is slated for demolition, was put back into use for housing purposes due to the conflict in Iraq and Afghanistan.
While I believe that this building is beneath the standard of what is acceptable, I think it is wrong to suggest that mold found behind an air conditioner somehow is an excuse to say that all of our veterans are receiving substandard medical care. It is important to remember that the building in question is an apartment building and not a medical facility. Stumpy, what do you think this is, a hospital? Further, the building was scheduled to be torn down within 2 years. So there. Try the veal. God!
And the people of that district around Cincinnati, even after she called Jack Murtha a coward on the floor of the House, put her back in office. I know I come back to this theme from time to time, but I can't help it. Never mind what's the matter with Kansas. What the hell's wrong with Cincinnati? Is it that bizarre ass stuff they eat and call chili? Has it roasted their brains? Have all the good breweries gone out of business and they sobered up and started voting Republican? Sobriety is highly overrated if that's the case. All the reporting was terribly overblown. Rats, cockroaches. And, you know, some mold by an air conditioner.
Lady, the mold by the air conditioner gets blown all over the room, you freaking moron!
Agnes, what happens to a woman's head when her hair's pulled back so tight that you can see, the skin on her nose is so pulled back that you can see her nose hairs? Does it hurt? Does it make you mean? Does it make you stupid?
She has brain damage, dear.
You think? That's like saying a skunk has a hygiene problem.
Well, you know, I mean, the mold and the feces in the operating rooms wouldn't really be a problem now, would it? But she, you know, she just needs a new
broom. Oh, time out. I love to share these with you guys because this is just so precious. Let's stay on topic. Veterans Administration report, colony of bats in clinic beneficial because bats keep the insects down. Our buddy Gene, the news ninja, shipped this one along. I said shipped. Some of the more striking problems were found at a VA clinic in White City, Oregon. There, officials reported roof leaks throughout the facility, requiring them to continuously repair the leaks upon occurrence, clean up any mold presence, if any exists, spray or remove ceiling tiles. In addition, large colonies of bats resided outside the facility. Mean Gene Schmidt was occasionally seen hanging in the trees with them.
I love hanging upside down. It shows my pumps off to their greatest advantage.
Large colonies of bats resided outside the facility and sometimes flew into the attics and interior parts of the buildings. Quote, eradication has been discussed, but the uniqueness of the situation, the number of colonies, makes it challenging to accomplish. In other words, if they would have wiped out the bats when they first started coming there, it would have been one thing, but now that it's a daggum condominium, it's a little hard to accomplish. The report also said the bats were being tested for diseases. Well, you know, at least the Veterans Administration has money to test the bats for diseases. Also, the bats keep the insect pollution to a minimum, which is beneficial. That means the bats eat the mosquitoes and the roaches. Charming!
Was this before or after Gene Schmidt was there?
I don't know if she's ever been in Oregon.
Well, I mean, the bats in the belfry, and they flew out.
Bats, I just love bats. No, we're going to finish up tonight. Because I've told you from time to time that I get these right-wing pitches for me to interview some freak. And they're still hustling John Cox to me, who has been on Mark Levine's show, and it was really kind of sad because it was like
It was like watching a cat play with a baby mouse. Poor Mark just destroyed John Cox. Bless his heart for having a sleazebag like Cox on there. So what have I got here? Some of this stuff, I can go off and riff on it or whatever. Some of it I can't improve on. Headline, Liberals Pushing Anti-Christian Hate Crimes Bill. Now, if you just read that headline, you would think that the liberals were in Congress introducing bills that allowed people to hate Christians. If passed, police will become so confused they won't know who or what or why to arrest. Wow, this is just going to do that to the police? If passed, police will become so confused they won't know who or what or why to arrest. Oh, obviously you're confused. I am not stinking drunk and I'm not driving this car. I'll be damned, I guess you're not. I guess I'll go my merry way because I'm confused. What it boils down, Congressman John Conyers has introduced the Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act of 2007 that allows federal law enforcement to step in where local, state, or county law enforcement is unwilling or unable to act. If the Conyers measure passes, an unprecedented circus could ensue with police officers called to a crime scene getting so confused that they might not know who or what to arrest. Conducting talk show interviews on this topic is 2008 GOP presidential candidate John Cox. Now here's the fun part. This is what's going to confuse the police. Sexual orientation? Gender identity? We know what gender is, male and female. But gender identity includes transsexuals, cross-dressers, and transsexuals from Transylvania. What? And a whole myriad of personas that are sometimes, quite frankly, difficult for anyone to distinguish which gender they most closely resemble. Listen, I watched the Valerie Plame hearings on CNN the other day, and I saw the drag queen at the back of the program dressed all in pink with the shirt that said Impeach Bush Now, and I wasn't confused, and I don't think there's a cop on earth that would be. That's a guy. But no, because the right-wing Christians are confused, and this explains a lot. This explains Ted Haggard. What do you mean? I was out there fooling around on my wife with a guy in a dress. I was confused. I thought he was a woman. Lord. But be careful not to mumble too loud, or some poor policeman might have to execute a federal mandate to pick you up and arrest you for daring to insult some entity he has to describe on his police report of a person who is simply indescribable. Oh, they are in love with the drag queens, aren't they? They're indescribable. How's this for starters on a police report? A white Caucasian male committed a hate crime for asking a black female who was cross-dressing as a white albino male to leave the men's room so his child could pee in peace. Wow. These people live in fear. And now they're scared of the cross-dressers. Scared of... I don't understand. This is about vile pieces of subhuman garbage who crucify little boys on barbed wire fences. This isn't about, Or it's about the subhuman garbage that beats a guy up for not being dressed according to the laws of expressed in Deuteronomy. And somewhere out there, because this email went out to bajillions of talk shows all over the country. Somewhere out there, somebody has picked up the phone and said, I want to talk to John Cox about the confused police officers who think that black women are actually albino white men in dresses. Yes, sir. That'll make some compelling radio. That'll light up the tree humping freaks of the right wing that listen to me every day. And you know what? Whoever's doing that booking is correct. Just amazing. It's been an amazing night. Traditional Values Coalition Executive Director Andrea Lafferty considers passage of this bill to be a fait accompli. Only in this case, the PR person has spelled it a fait accompli. It's got something to do with Greek cheese. Saying, sadly, this new Congress will probably vote in both the House and Senate to pass this anti-Christian hate crimes bill, because everybody knows that the primary function of Christianity is to go out there and question the fashion sense of a gender-confused guy. Honey, the pumps don't work with the bag, and you need to be beaten to death for it. And I don't need to be prosecuted for a hate crime when I do. We're done. I gotta quit. I've had it. Let me up. I've had enough. The show tonight was produced by my lovely, darling, talented wife, Agnes. It was engineered by John Fox in Sydney, Australia. The streams, the podcasts, and the archives of everything on the Horn are managed and maintained by the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, at thewhiterosesociety.org. He's got a fundraiser going on. If you haven't donated, and you are able to, no matter how small, please do. If what we do on the Horn matters to you. Our IT professional is Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida. We have wonderful news ninjas, Betsy, Jean, and Susan. Great moderators in the chat room, like ELO and Lottie and Cricket. Cricket? Everything on the Horn happens because there are several thousand members of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters, and they go out every day and they build the American dream, and by supporting this network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
the Head On Radio Network.
Cheney heads to hospital for examination. Mastermind of USS Cole attack confesses. Senate okays limits on Gonzales' authority. Bush affirms support for Gonzales, but Gonzales' hold on job grows uncertain. Australian detainee writes of beatings at Guantanamo. Lawmakers threaten FBI over spy powers. Patience for Iraq war is waning, says leaders. Rice warns against Iranian missile threats. Russia gives Iran ultimatum on enrichment. London is the world capital of the 21st century, says New York. Court probes limits on student speech. Taiwan to test defenses against China in a live fire drill. GOP candidates confront immigration policies. Obama more liberal than Kucinich analysis reveals. Is popular YouTube ad big trouble for Hillary? Schwarzenegger calls Rush Limbaugh irrelevant. KSM, is he the ultimate patsy and he confesses? These are the issues ahead on the Jeff Allen Wolf Show, starting now.